Getting 1 million people to innovate might be a little bit of a tall order for most of us, but not for my guest. Hey, I'm Werner Puchert and you're listening to the Block Thinking Podcast. And this week we have Jens Heitland. He's a former IKEA innovation leader. He's traveled Europe and worked all over the place. Also built himself a career, like most of us, starting with humble beginnings. I think he started as an engineer, as someone who worked with his hands, and then ultimately now inspires people to innovate. He recently went on his own. He's got his own little entrepreneurial business going on. It sounds small when I say it, but he's doing big things. As I mentioned in the beginning of the show, his objective is to get 1 million people to innovate during the course of this year. And we're nearly heading to the end of this year, so hopefully he's doing well. In the interview, he talks a little bit about the process that he follows, because, I mean, you have to have some kind of methodology. He's done a lot of work around releasing and creating frameworks to help people do just that, because if you want to get 1 million people to innovate, you need to inspire them, you need to teach, you need to share knowledge. And Jens does this all the time. Now, I will also mention it in the interview, but I want to encourage you to go check out Jens. You can find him either on LinkedIn under his own name, but also under Heitland Innovation or on 1 Million Innovateurs. He's got a whole bunch of projects going on. This interview will focus really on his entrepreneurial kind of focus and what he's trying to do and his methodologies, but innovation methodologies. But I also want to encourage you to look at the work that he's doing through the lens of entrepreneurship. Look at what he's doing, how he's involving people, how he's actually, getting other people to support a lot of the work that he's doing. Because if you want to get 1 million people to innovate, you're going to need help. And I think sometimes what happens is when we run our little teams or our businesses, we want to do it all ourselves because we want to focus. And I respect that, because you want to give something from yourself, but we have to rely on our friends, our family, and our close ones and our teammates to help us get things done and also give them the credibility. So let me get off my soapbox and give you the opportunity to listen to Jens. Hope you enjoy. Jens, thank you for joining, sir.
Hello, Werner.
And finally, your camera is looking great. If people just knew how we were jumping around, right?
We didn't struggle at all.
No, it's a smoothless process. Now, Jens, I did a terrible task of introducing you. I like to talk about people in my life where they kind of personally touch me and the effect that they have, because I think for me that is more important than all the important labels on your door, because I do think you've touched on a lot of lives as we kind of go through this process of entrepreneurship. But maybe let's start off a little bit, because this is a question that probably always comes up with you, is talk a little bit about this whole IKEA thing, man. That must have been interesting, and maybe one or two of the successes or learnings from that.
It's a long story. I was almost 12 years in IKEA. And it's a lot of people associate me with IKEA, but there's a whole other planet around myself, which is not IKEA. It's just the most flashy thing for a lot of people externally who don't know me. So and I still use that, to be honest. It's a good door opener. So giving you a little bit background, I was starting in IKEA in an IKEA store where I was basically the manager for the facility management inside an IKEA store. So it's like, how do you do the maintenance? How do you support the key retail practice behind the scenes with the building, with every services around that? That's how I started my career, and then moved on inside IKEA in different position. Was responsible for 11 stores, then moved into the headquarter in Germany, did a couple of things, was then a global project manager after a couple of projects in Germany where we looked into what is the future sustainable IKEA store, and we built basically a prototype store, if you want to say it like this, a test store where we tried things out, and then basically the whole organization was taking this then into the future stores, and a lot of stores with that concept, with this understanding, have been built until today. And then I was jumping out of the German organization, going to Russia, was head of sustainability and later on head of innovation and customer experience, and ended up in being global responsible for innovation inside the IKEA Centers business. So that's in a nutshell, but that's just a tiny piece. It's 12 years of my career. I started my career when I was 16 on the construction site. So I was working really on construction site as electrician and did a couple of things before I joined IKEA, of course, as well, to get even into IKEA.
So would you, like, I mean, we've spoken about it a little bit, and I'm going to ask it here, is that, like, in essence, though, you know, sometimes we look at you as like the corporate guy, but the more I get to know you, the more I feel like you've been always the entrepreneur, because, like, even talking about your engineering background, you started back then, like, crafting away, no matter what you kind of take on, you try and look at it from an entrepreneurial perspective.
Yeah. That was, I think, less obvious in a lot of IKEA settings, but it was always like I was in positions and was driving things forward and then seeking the next one, driving into the next job, finding another project to lead and really building that in, which when I left IKEA was getting even bigger because I set out to build my own business. And that's when the real fun, at least on my end, started, because it's basically everything you know in theory. Where, because I've been working a lot with startups and looking into how do you build different internal, like, startups and how you build processes that help you to think more entrepreneurial, which is all good inside a large corporation. But it's even more fun if you're on the other side, where you basically, you do this, and we have talked about that, where it's basically every day something new. You can test your ways of thinking in different ways. You can prototype on a daily basis. And nobody from above is telling you what you should do or you should not do, because it's, at least for myself, I'm the owner of the business, and most of the businesses I have founded or at least co-owner of it. So I have the possibility to just decide and go into a direction which I think is the right one for now. It's quite cool to do that on a daily basis.
And the thing is that, we've spoken about this a little bit, but I don't think we've tackled it directly, is that there is now, I mean, it's like I described in the beginning, I always saw you as the innovation guy, and we kind of built the relationship and started kind of hanging out because of entrepreneurship. And I think, you know, like, and also looking at a way that you kind of building these businesses, kind of testing, prototyping, and that's kind of also a little bit of innovation language. Like, how do you see the difference between, like, being an entrepreneur or the, you know, and tackling innovation? Is it kind of mutually exclusive stuff? Is it the same thing? How do you bring the two aspects of that together?
I think there are a lot of things in common. It's more because I'm coming from a more corporate background, at least the last couple of years. This is helping me to structure it in a different way and use, of course, for me, innovation is still a huge buzzword in a lot of organizations and out there. But for me, it's more a mindset which you can apply. And if you're an entrepreneur, specifically, let's say in the first couple of years, building up a business, then you're very much into that, or at least you should be very much into this, trying and finding what is the right market fit and really understanding what it is. And that's for a large corporation, just not where you are. If you're 20, 30, 40, 70 years old, it's just a different planet. There have been so many people before you who have been putting their effort into building the business. So if you do this yourself, then it's basically you use this innovation way of thinking, or a lot of people are at least using it on a daily basis, and don't think that it is innovation or labeled innovation in other surroundings. So that's where I think there are a lot of common things. But as well as some other things where I can benefit from, because I was in a large organization. I know how to structure like my marketing plan, like how I do this long-term perspective and so on, because it's a long-term game. It's not a quick thing. And that's helping a lot.
And I think also, I mean, I want to tell you a story about innovation, but I'll leave it for a second. The other thing I wanted to say too is I think also what you have, though, which is a bit of a probably advantage is the word I'm looking for, is the fact that you can also speak the corporate language. I think what I've seen also after leaving a corporation and then going on my own, because I've done it twice. So I've done it after my ad agency space. And then I felt like I didn't have much success. Stepped back into a firm, got more knowledge, got out again. And now I have the language to communicate with people in management. I understand the culture of a corporation. I get a better insight. I wonder, like, probably for you, the same thing. Like, the clients that you're currently serving, you're able to identify and empathize with what they're going through, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So one part is the language, but as well, understanding how, if you come up with an idea inside a large corporation or organization, that it's, there are different hurdles inside a large organization to get you to implementing an idea or drive a change process in an organization. So that helps a lot when you have been part of an organization like that, where you know it's not just happening from today to tomorrow, which could happen in my business, but it's just not possible if you are working in a larger setting. And I've experienced that a lot, and I'm now as well helping exactly right now a company which is structuring a huge change project and helping them to do that in a way with all my experience, but I'm still the outsider and doing it in a coaching way, which for me is the key point where I get most energy out of working with the people and helping the people to understand, empowering them to do this instead of me coming in as an outsider and telling them exactly what they need to do. And that's a bit where I've decided for myself that I need to do things where I'm getting energy out of. And if we go back to the corporate world, I got a lot of energy inside the IKEA world in challenging and being a bit the rebel, which I now can be on a daily base, because I can be the rebel in an interaction with the coaching setting where I'm asking challenging questions, but as well give them the support and helping them to find out what the right thing is. That's for me just fascinating, seeing that on a day-to-day base.
Super interesting. There's a difference between doing the innovation and coaching it. But I guess probably in the leadership position where you were, you know, a leader doesn't necessarily do the thing. He inspires and help and also kind of coach. But now you're kind of a full-time coach. Now it's about getting other people to that point, right? To like, yeah, teach a man to fish, they say.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, even it depends a little bit on the company culture, how you do that in a management position as well. And IKEA is very much about leading with good example and helping, empowering the employees on an ongoing basis. So it's not really top down, at least not in all parts.
Yeah, it's not like one of my clients, because this is the thing I wanted to tell you. I always laugh, and I tell people this example when I speak, like ask, or when the conversation goes about innovation. Is I worked for a client a long time ago, and they put a large amount of pressure on us to come up with innovative ideas for, this was in marketing and marketing campaigns. And I will never forget, we're in the room, and they were kind of a bit angry after we presented an idea which they didn't like, which happens. And they said to me, you should innovate. I want to see innovation, and I want to see 4 examples where it worked before. So
that's very, very helpful.
Yeah. Like, go do something new and like go out there, but I want to see the examples where it worked. So, and I guess that the innovation also goes along with failure, right? It's, you know, but failure itself is also a learning opportunity.
Yeah, that's the main reason to do it. You're about to learn what you can do next and how you can do it better.
Yeah. Now talking about coaching, and this is the main reason that I have you on here. And if you've just joined the stream, this is Jens Hetland from Hetland Innovation. If you follow him at all on social media and engage with any of his content, you will notice that he's doing updates every day. And he's also set himself out a challenge. Now, this, like, I set myself out a challenge to make my numbers at the end of the year. I'm kind of working very hard to do that, as a good spreadsheet guy would do. But he's done something different, which is inspiring. But I was going, what? Can you talk a little bit about that, Jens? The you want to get how many people to innovate by the end of the year?
Yeah, just 1 million.
I'm going to take
a
sip of
coffee. You will be laughing. I'm a spreadsheet guy, as well. So there are a couple of things in common as well. No, but so for me, I have been working with a lot of companies, and I've been having tremendous success in my career. And then I was always looking into, specifically in the pandemic, I was just seeing that so many people and organizations are not using the opportunity and doing things differently in this time where we are basically squeezed in different spaces. So I was thinking, how can I give back and do something which is not just for the purpose of doing it for myself or any of my businesses? And then I said, I will put myself into a situation where I have no idea how to do it. And I just announced that, and I'm very, very much a fan of this kind of things, where I just announced that I will do something next year and I will put it, prototype my way through it. And then I was basically brainstorming, looking into what could it be. And it needed to be with innovation. It needed to be with people. And then I just somehow came up overnight, basically, hey, I will empower 1 million people to innovate and I will figure out how to do that. And I announced it. So then if I'm announcing something, then I'm making it happen. Yeah. So then I basically built up a super easy website and figuring out how to do that. So I really started, and I'm still in the way of prototyping my way through it. So it's how can you make something happen? How do you create a movement where you empower 1 million people to innovate? And what are the different things you can do to make that happen? So I started a daily vlog where I'm just documenting what I'm doing on a day-to-day base, because that's not the only thing I'm doing, where I'm still struggling because I don't have enough time to just focus on that, which I would love to, but I also need to finance my life and taking care of the business I've established. So, but the whole thing is about how do I organize myself and how do I help others to innovate in different settings? And it's quite funny. I can tell you now, I'm 3 months in, and a lot of people in the beginning say, that's just a marketing gig. That's a marketing thingy. Yeah. But yesterday was day number 70 on my daily vlog, where there are people are slowly picking up and it's like, oh shit, it's 70 days. He's seriously into that, because I'm not selling anything in this and I'm not interested in selling anything. Yeah. But for example, when I reached out in the beginning, I was really pushing for getting free speaking gigs. And getting free speaking gigs is not easy in this world, because nobody wants to do free speaking.
Exactly.
At least nobody wants, because everyone thinks you are trying to sell something, which is quite interesting. I just offered myself to free speaking and nobody picked it up. And then slowly, so now after 3 months, you can see it's slowly picking up, that people are, oh, yeah, that's interesting. I've seen you are consistent there. There's something going on. Let us talk. So now I'm as well, I have prototyped so much things in the background as well with the stuff I'm shooting out. So one is the daily thing I did, webinars I did, different other engagement possibilities and so on. It's really finding out what works and how do I empower people.
Yeah.
And then I did, for example, a presentation in South Africa, or at least via Zoom in South Africa last.
What can I say? It's a good place.
Yeah, I know. So I got 2 testimonials out of that, which is the way how I measure that. So I made it even harder for myself, which is I'm not just taking people who like my posts and then count how many people like my post or whatever I do. It's more, you need to contact me and say, you have empowered me to innovate. And that's counting into the 1 million.
Uh-huh. So there's measurement.
Which is the hardest
thing. There's measurement.
It is, but it's the hardest thing to do, because not everyone who is consuming my content or is interacting with me is straight away afterwards, hey, thank you very much. I like that. And you have empowered me. Thank you. So it's quite interesting. So if you just take the math, you need to empower 2,000 plus people per day to get towards 1 million. If you just look, but I'm an exponential thinker, so I still believe it will happen, because until now I've like 5 or 6 official. So I hope I will get a couple of more today.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you've got one from me already. You've helped me already, so I'll have to write up a. I'm just one of those lazy ones. I just take the help and I don't give back.
You haven't done it.
Yeah. I need to, come on. I need to do my share here. The other thing that I think is also kind of meta and interesting about what you're doing, which is kind of interesting for me from a marketing perspective, just to keep an eye on, is that I think I dialed into like episode number 10 of what you were doing. And what was interesting is that you were actually drawing out some of the ideas of how you're going to do it on a whiteboard at some stage. So you were kind of mapping it out or showing at least a glimpse of the whiteboard. So not only are you trying to drive the innovation of 1 million people, but you're also kind of documenting the process of doing it. So it's kind of like, I don't know, there's no chicken and egg here. It's like both happening at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. That was a little bit what I thought in the beginning as well, letting people be part of that, because it's like the 5 minute mile thing, where yeah. It's like the first person who was able to run a mile after, is it 5 minutes, 3 minutes?
It's a 10 minute mile, isn't it? Or I can't remember now. I'm getting old.
No, 10 minutes.
A mile. 1 minute, ten.
It's 3 minutes. Mile.
If anybody knows the answer to this, please help
let
a brother
us know.
Out.
But it's like the first person is able to achieve it, and there will be others following who are able to do even better.
Yeah.
So if I can just inspire one person in 1 year to try to reach 2 million, 10 million, whatever, that's already the biggest thing I can ever do. Or even if I can inspire one person in 1 year to inspire one other person to innovate, that's already deal done for myself. But I still, I'm 100% convinced I will reach the 1 million. I have a lot of things still in my background where I say, I will test that, but it's too early right now. So I'm really digging into that. So what I have started last week, I'm going more into education. Because I think that's a bit what I was lacking in the beginning, was I was sharing a bit what's going on and talking on my daily videos, but I wasn't sharing of how you could do this on yourself. So I will be doing different things. I will be sharing more on videos, longer videos, where I'm basically deconstructing a couple of my coaching tools, which help you to innovate. And then I will do that will go, of course, on YouTube, but I will share a bit more on that on LinkedIn. And then on Facebook, I will go more into the personal world.
Yeah.
So how could you do this as a person, not as an organization? So where I try, but at least that's in my planning for the next week. So I will prototype that and see how it's working, if people are engaging with it or not. And then I will figure out. So there are measurements behind the scenes where I have basically an Excel table of calculating the engagement and fun stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is, then you're gonna have like a little like column for when is Vander phoning to find out if it worked, because it's did it work? Okay, cool. We can, because the thing is like you know, we've spoken about this platform here, is that what I've also seen, and I mean I'm not even close to critical mass or anything yet, and I think one of the big challenges is, and I think where you also dropped into the education space, is that it's really about like trying to figure out the value that you can give to someone else. Else it's just talking heads, right? So it's like, and talking about giving value, right? I twisted your arm. Well, I didn't twist it too hard, because you actually offered it. You gave me some insight into the how. And when I talk about the how, it's kind of like the program/framework. And perhaps before we start looking at like frameworks and stuff, just to make it clear in my mind, because sometimes I go to your websites and I say, where can I click up for the one, fill in the 1 million thing? There isn't like is there a thing that I can click and say, okay, cool, I want to join the 1 million innovation thing? Or is it kind of just become part of your circle of influence and see where you're going? Is there a concrete call to action, or how are you doing it at the moment?
Yeah. So there's a separate website which is showing more me as a person and my idea and a little bit of what's going on, which is called 1millioninnovateurs.com. And innovateurs like this, not innovator.
Yeah.
Innovateur.
And I didn't make a slide for that. So I need to put that into the show notes after that. So we'll make a point of doing that.
Yeah. So that's basically where I just started out. And it's not fancy. It's more about the content in itself. So I didn't build that up in a way that it's super flashy and super nice. I mean, it is still nice, I think.
Of course.
But it's not over the top. It's not a corporate version. So because the whole initiative for me is a personal. It's not financed by anyone. It's not sponsored. It's just my personal initiative. Of course, that's a little bit reflecting into the business world as well. But the key is really empowering 1 million people. And that's what it's all about. And as well, the corporations I will be doing inside of this space are all about the empowerment, not about earning money. Earning money happens in my other business.
Exactly. So, and then the other thing, like this is a bit of a side note because I want to get into the frameworks because there is thinking behind this. It's not just about buying the sky stuff. And I want to share a little bit of the thinking. And I think that's the takeaway for today. But the other thing that I think is interesting, and we spoke about this as a little bit of a side note, is the daily practice. And once again, it's a bit off topic, but have you found any reward in the daily practice of actually doing these updates? Because like doing an update a day is insane, but there is value in it, right?
It is. I can tell you. No, that's so there are a couple of things which are more related towards me and my personal goals for this year, but I'm just reflecting into that. What I've seen, and that's a little bit of research I did, one of the most powerful tools is videos in the whole marketing world, in the whole business world, because of lockdown and because of the, just the movement and technology advancements coming up. So if you want to do good business in the future with smaller companies, videos is one of the most effective ways. And I'm still shit, sorry to say that, in videos. So what I have set out myself, like I will do a lot of videos because if I'm doing a lot of videos, I will get better and better and better.
Yeah.
And I'm more a speaking person than a writing person because writing is even harder for me. So I said, let's do video first. And then I started learn writing. So just doing it on a daily basis, these videos, and you don't see that behind the scenes. So I started with the first 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 15 videos on a day-to-day base, which was more about like 15 minutes before writing down what am I going to talk about here and there. Yesterday, video number 70 or the update of day number 70 was about, I have my whiteboard in front of me. I'm just having like 5 bullet points. What did I do? And then I just go off. So it's like, it's the 30 seconds or the 1 minute you see on the video. That's basically how long it takes.
It's like
so just doing that exactly.
The practice. 100%. The practice. It makes sense. Like the more you do it, because I think that's also probably also true for innovation, right? It's like you, the more you do it, the better you're going to get, and it's just getting your hands dirty in there. Now,
but it's maybe just to add on to that. Sorry.
No, go.
And it's I think what you need to do is not trying to make it perfect every day. It's getting into the habit and doing it. It's like when I was doing a lot of sports, training for triathlon, it's about consistency. It's not about that every day will be perfect and every day will be flashing. It's consistent as well, putting yourself out, because that's already strange for a lot of people, putting yourself out there and really posting it, even if you don't like it. That's even worse. Specifically on LinkedIn, I can tell you.
Exactly. I know, I feel your pain. The thing that I want to ask though, and sorry, you're kind of pulling me into this weird direction with this, right? Is that, and I think, I mean, even though we're talking about creating content ourselves and kind of this kind of content space, I want to also equate it. And I think there's a parallel to be drawn between design, innovation. And I think you've just done that parallel. Is that I would love to know if you actually go back and watch some of your older videos. Do you watch the content you create, or do you just push it out and then kind of reflect on it in your mind and then continue with the rest? Or do you actually go back and review the content you've done?
The daily videos, I have never looked back once. The other stuff, yes, but that's more a different strategy where it's like when I do the longer form video, that's pillar content where I use that and make smaller content clips and so on out of it. So that I'm reviewing it just to see where are the nuggets.
Yeah.
But the daily stuff, I'm never looking back.
Yeah, I'm kind of like you. Like the, my daily, I have a small little personal daily podcast that I record, and I don't necessarily listen to them like back. I will once or twice listen to one just to hear if the audio is in proper check, because you have to check some of the tech stuff. You don't want to hurt people's ears. But the one thing between you and me, just between you and me, I've been very nervous.
Nobody's
to actually
listening anyhow.
No one's listening. I've been very nervous to listen or watch back the live streams I've done. I mean, I've only done a handful, but I'm like, ooh, like every time I go, like, what have I done? You know, like you always think of the mistakes. I mean, you start working on them again, but I do think that I have to go back and actually watch some of them because there's some really key, I've got some cool people on there.
Yeah.
Extract some content and then get learnings from it. I think that's an important thing. And also, you know, when a project goes really balls up, go back, go look at it. And don't go look at it in a form of like blaming people. I've seen that too. Like, I went wrong because Vanner didn't switch on his camera. No. Go back and look at, like, maybe there should have been a process in place to switch on your damn camera. So.
But that's super valid point. So what I do is I do that with the longer form stuff, but I have as well something marked in the future where I'm looking into reusing all the content.
Yeah.
Because if you do this for a year, there's tremendous amount of content. If you can use that again in a different way, maybe you do a compilation of all the different days, or you do a documentary, which is like different way of using the content, and then basically helping the people to understand what happened over a year in a time-lapse perspective.
Because each conversation has nuggets, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, can I kick? I want to get into stealing your stuff. Can we do this now?
Of course.
But you can also go to Jens's website and ask him for some of his stuff. He might be nice enough. But the thing is, so we've spoken a bit about the 1 million, and you've but there's thinking behind it. There's some frameworking behind it, and I need to change my slide here. And you were so kind enough to actually share some of the framework ideas with me, so that we can show some of that. So. I mean, we don't have to go super deep here. I think it would be cool to actually go to Jens's website. And I think this some of this content's available there if you sign up or on your newsletter sometimes.
Yeah, no, so this framework I'm giving away for free. I'm not sure if it's still on the 1 million. I will put it back onto the 1 million as well. But it's definitely for free to download on hypelandinnovation.com.
Excellent.
I just see the homepage, scroll a little bit further down where you see this logo, and then you can download it.
Thanks, Jens. And I'll add it to the show notes as well when we do an update of this, and then link it up.
Yeah.
Because I think there's some really valuable stuff here, but also I wanted to go in there and for you to explain a little bit. So there's kind of an approach that you've laid out, and I think the key slide or the key picture I want to show is this one. If you can talk a little bit through that. I mean, it's got your nice innovateur kind of logo there. But then also, I mean, I see the success pillars, phases, and then I'm going to keep quiet just for you to talk us through this.
Yeah. So one thing, now being 2 years into my business and supporting companies and individuals in innovating, I was looking into how can I simplify that? Because for me, it's just for the people who are looking behind the scenes is like I do this. A lot of things are natural already to me, and I do this out of the cuff. But then I'm looking into if I want to make it repeatable and easier for others to do, I need to structure it in a better way. So then I've looked into what are the best ways to do that. And of course, then if you work with innovation, there's business model canvas, which is fairly easy to understand, and this kind of things, or the lean startup methodology where Eric Ries is teaching different things. And I said, I will do something as easy, understandable and simple to understand as that, to get into a direction to empower more people. So what I started with was basically the inner blue part, which was the applied innovation processes, which is starting with deconstruct, then you go to rebuild, then you go to experiment, and then you go to accelerate. That was the starting point. So I was looking into how can you help companies and individuals to look into the business from a different angle. So I was helping them to look into these different phases with different perspectives. And then I put on top a layer, which is the leadership, the business, and the community, which are the key success pillars of every business out there, where it's about how do you build a leadership practice that empowers the organization to innovate? That's one piece. And that has more different chapters in it. So if you take leadership, that is first you need to understand how do you lead yourself before you lead someone else.
Yeah.
And that might sound weird, but I've taken that from the leadership trainings I got in IKEA, where it was always about how do you lead yourself, how do you lead others? And then there are different other steps. But that's key part in the leadership successful. You need to be able to empower your organization to do it and step back as a leader, as a manager. And then you can take this towards thought leadership. So that's all inside the leadership piece. And then I will jump over business to community, which is how do you engage with your dream customers? How do you find the right customers? How do you build the community around your leadership? So if you have thought leadership on one side, you have the community and the people who are following you and your dream customers you want to engage with and your employees inside the community. So how do you work with them? And then the business part or the businesses between leadership and community is basically the way you monetize that.
Okay.
So that's inside the success pillars. And that's what I bring into when I'm coaching, for example, clients and or bigger companies or individuals and bigger companies. That's we dig always into these topics using the different phases inside the process. So that's the high level understanding of it.
Excellent, Joe, and thanks for this, because I kind of made my own assumptions about the leadership and the business and the community, and now I understand how you brought this into play. But just for me to also understand, so when you look at the deconstruct, do you look at, I mean, if I understand this correctly, it's like you probably go back and you look at the business and then deconstruct all the elements in it, the question I'm trying to ask, is this deconstructing elements in the leadership, business, and then looking in community, or am I understanding it incorrectly?
No, for me, it's always a system thinking. It's not one or the other. It's, you always need to see it from a total system. If you want, you can go one slide further into the deconstruct version, which is just canvas version. So this is basically taking everything into consideration. So if you look into the players, it's basically an ecosystem understanding of your business.
Uh-huh.
And you can do that if you're a leader, you do a stakeholder mapping where you understand, okay, who is attached to me in our business? If you look an inside perspective, if you look an outside perspective, if you look into what is competition, who are different partners, all of that. And then having this understood, you go into a relationship understanding of what are the relationships between your organization or the people in your organization towards your customers, towards your partners, towards the ecosystem players. And you can do that again on an organizational level, which is internal, where you understand, okay, what is the relationship between marketing and sales? What is the relationship between Peter and Vanna? Or you can do that again between what is the relationship between your organization and your competitor and your customer and so on. So that's always having a holistic view. And then you look into challenges. What I always do with the challenges is how do you create a win-win in your ecosystem? So I'm helping people inside of organizations to understand a win-win thinking. Then from that, you look into opportunities and bring that into structuring it into an opportunity funnel going forward. So that's what's happening in all these different phases. It's always a holistic view, which works on an individual level and works on an organizational level. That's basically how I built that up over the last years, with, of course, the 24 years plus of experience in working in different businesses, organizations, and leading a lot of people.
Wow, it's clever, because I mean, the thing is, in some way, sometimes what you will do is you'll create like a context or a tool or something like this for a specific segment or for a specific target audience. But what you've done is you've taken kind of the principles, and then it depends on the context that you engage with. So if it's a leadership, because all those pillars hold true no matter what, you have to just look at it from your perspective, and then And then it feeds, because I was wondering about the funnels, because if you look at some of the other, we'll go to the other ones, there's always a funnel. So it feels like what you're trying to do is it's not just about smashing a bunch of context onto a canvas. There needs to be some kind of action or outcome after that. And I understand that's what the funnel,
absolutely.
Like what do we do with this now?
So you basically, if you have the opportunities, you have a bunch of mappings of opportunities. Let's say if you have a whiteboard or whatever way you gather them, then you need to structure them in a way of what are the opportunities you think are the most relevant for your customers.
Yeah.
What are the opportunities that bring the most bang for your buck and this kind of thinkings. So that's a bit going into that direction. And then you structure them. What are the things you do first, second, third? Because that's often in organizations, what I have seen, or even in individuals, you have a lot of good ideas, but you don't get any of the ideas flying because you're not structuring them into a pipeline. And that's basically putting them into a funnel, which gives you an opportunity getting it structured going forward.
Yeah.
But maybe just to say, I mean, this is the highest level I have of the stuff I'm doing. I have between each of these different topics, I have when I'm doing individual coaching inside of organization, me as a coach, I have 10, 15, 20 canvases and structures behind that. That's just the simplified version where I say, I boil it together that I can try and explain it to people and as easy as possible. And that's still complex.
And for that, we need to go to one of the other businesses and then you're going to charge us, right?
Of course.
Of course.
Always.
You have to pay the rent.
No, if you go to the next one.
Okay. And this is now so Rebuild. That's okay.
Yeah. So this is the Rebuild understanding where you look into the customers. And customers is really, you boil it down to what are the dream customers. Because if you're going into an organization as a consultant, then you always look into what are the 20%, if you just think 80-20, what are the 20% which are giving you the biggest turnover or 80% of the turnover and so on and so on. So it's more about what are your dream customers? How can you provide value towards them? Which means you need to understand your customers from an inside out perspective again. Like needs, dreams, and desires of your dream customers. Who are they? What are they caring about? And then you look into how do you provide value to them with all the different, and again, taking the ecosystem thinking from the first phase into this, taking the opportunities from the first phase into this and say, okay, if we build our business from the scratch again, starting with the customer, not with the organization. So it's the order here I always use is, in the end, it doesn't really matter, but for me, it's always customer's value. Then you jump into the offer. So how do you build an offer that is providing the value towards the dreams, needs, and desires to the customers? And then you build the business, which is then like business model canvas. Yeah. What is the different structures behind the business? And then you look into what is the right company structure to develop to deliver that offer, which can be different.
So just to make sure that the South African is understanding correctly, because I think I might have had an aha moment, right? Is that you have the opportunities in the first, and the deconstruct, right? So, and then the opportunities come along, they're kind of sitting on the side and you work through this and then you look at the opportunities again and go, what are these opportunities align with my customer and the value I want to give them? And then the ones that do not kind of fall off or get kind of deprioritized and the ones that actually align with this get prioritized. I don't get that. That is amazing. And the other thing,
that's the tricky thing if you just have the drawing in front of you.
Yeah, but this is really cool. And the other thing that you just said that resonates with me, and I had a conversation with a client about this week, and I would like to hear what your responses to this is, that she was telling me that the one thing that is concerning for her and what she's working with and trying to, you know, twist in a better way is that the organization that she's working with is currently really focusing on the customers that are having the most pains, the people who are complaining the most, the people who are giving the low NPS scores, the grumpy folks. And what she says that she's starting to work on now, and they're doing strategies to look at the customers that actually are loyal. And what I like about your framework here is that you're saying, it's probably not entirely the same thing, but you're saying, let's look at the dream 100 customers that we want. And we see how we want, because I think that also fundamentally changes your business a little bit, because if you're going to be working with grumpy people and grumpy customers, I mean, customers are always right, but who wants to work with grumpy customers? You want to work with people that inspire and people that you want to serve, right?
Exactly. And that's for me, one of the most key things, specifically in the early, let's say, first 5 years of your business. You need to nail that over time. You start up with an idea of what it is, and then you need to nail it, bring it down to say, this is the customer I would love to work with my whole life, or at least as long as I'm running that business.
Yeah.
Because then the communication things and how you market yourself will all go towards that direction. It's like, I have it on my wall here. What is my dream customer? And even to the level that I have names and so on for them, just for me to reminder when I'm shooting something out, from a business perspective. So if you look into my business content, that's then always targeted towards that person. So if you call this, let's say my persona, if you still work with persona,
yeah,
Peter or whatever, or Werner, then you can target it. Is it resonating to Werner, yes or no? If not, then it's the wrong message. So that's all connected to that as well.
Awesome.
Just a little sidetrack.
No, it's on point.
Then you take it. So you take that then into, okay, if we have the understanding of that's the business, and you take the opportunities from the first phase, then you say, okay, which ones are working with this? What is working from a business perspective? And what assumptions do you have? And then you say, okay, these are the assumptions which are all behind this. Because like you do this in a theoretical environment, if you start off at least. So that's, of course, an iterative process going forward, but it's basically, okay, let's validate that.
Yeah.
And then you put, again, structuring the topics you want to validate in a proper way, that you bring them into a funnel where you say, I validate this first because that's the most risky assumption. If this is wrong, everything else falls apart.
Exactly.
So I invest into that and sorting that in a proper way, which gives us then the opportunity to jump into the experimentation.
Experimentation. There you go. So now I've got all my stuff that I want to validate. And this is probably also the part where people struggle and it gets a bit nerve-wracking, because now you have to experiment.
Exactly. So you start with looking into basically a zoom in perspective, where you take this, let's say the list of 5, 10, 20, whatever opportunities, ideas you have, you want to validate, assumptions into a focus perspective to zoom into one. And then you basically build, I always call it an innovation GPS, because you need to measure properly what you're going to do. You need to understand what are the different KPIs that work with the testing environment, but as well help us to elevate the whole company. So it's always having a detailed version, which gives you the understanding of the experiment, and then a higher version, which gives you how is it contributing to your company goals. And then you basically build up a setup of the different prototypes from an understanding of that they are all somehow connected. In the best case, it's one product or one concept you want to test. And then you basically do prototypes in a more detailed setting. And then again, all the things you have prototyped, you come up, let's say you do this a couple of times and you build a couple of concepts, a couple of products, which then are again going into a funnel, which is the acceleration funnel, where you put them into an order, which then goes into the next one.
Yeah, because I mean, just to also understand, like when it goes into the acceleration funnel, it's now post MVP, because a prototype, sometimes people misunderstand, it's a minimal, I mean, some people hate this term, but it's like a minimal viable product. It's something that works.
Yeah.
You can do proper testing with. It's probably not the final thing, but it gives you enough insights.
Yeah.
But then what I understand now is, okay, you go, okay, this thing worked. Now we need to scale it, implement it, and then it goes into the acceleration funnel. And then if I go to
exactly
acceleration over here, now
there's basically where you take one of them first. So it's always like you take one concept, one product, where you look into, okay, how do you build this up in a sustainable way? Which is, how do you scale this that it is working, but with the long-term perspective?
Yeah.
Which I see a lot of companies failing, because they want to have it out today and tomorrow they want to have the 2 million turnover of it, which works in some organizations, but it's not the normal case. So how do you plan that in? It's also connecting it to the change. Every product you launch is a change, and other problems will arise when you launch a product or have a new concept which you bring alive. So what are the changes needed inside your organization, and or with the marketing, and or with the customer messaging, and or how you run that inside the business? And then I always go towards the story. So how do you tell the story? How do you help to make this alive, which is a lot of marketing? But it's also, how do you structure your messages in a way that you empower your customers and our clients, depending on what you work with, to tell the story?
Yeah.
So in the best case, everyone else is telling your story, and you don't need to spend money if you just take the
exactly
easy version. Then
yeah,
you look into how do you sell that. Then you go into what are the different sales structures that help you to make that happen. That can be a sales funnel, that can be a normal e-commerce website, that can be one-on-one whatever the right sales methodology is for your product, for your concept, is basically part of this one. And then it goes into implementation, which is like, okay, we now understand all of that. That's basically the preparation. Then you launch it. That's then going into the implementation.
Jens, this is awesome. Like,
fairly easy.
Yeah, it's like now that I, because the thing is, when I looked at the diagrams the first time, I looked at them in a sequential way, which they are in sequence, but the thing is they actually feed into each other. And that's what I'm like, what I got from this is that each little funnel is actually a bounce or a step into the next one. And, but the other thing, of course, also what you pointed out, I mean, we do realize that you look at this, I'm quite excited at the fact that there's a lot of detail here, but then there is a lot of work that sits underneath each of those topics. Like prototyping, for example, is a huge thing. Sustainability and then sales. I mean, you need to get the product out there and think about sales strategies, that kind of stuff. But I think that what you've done is you've taken, because sometimes what I've seen is that you kind of latch the innovation structure onto a kind of design thinking process, and then it feels a bit wonky. Because everybody wants to do a workshop and have a product, but this kind of shows you more a long-term kind of flow of what's going to happen and how this thing needs to build out. But then the other thing I would probably add, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm going crazy because I'm excited, sorry, is that that this is not necessarily a linear process that happens over time in an organization. You can have different ideas sitting at different steps within this flow, right? It's kind of like an agile thing that happens.
Exactly. And it's also, you can as well take just one phase and have a look. Like you have a specific product which you think you know is working. You just take one of the canvases and go into experiment or go into rebuild and just run yourself through it or with your team, which just helps you to understand. It's a bit like business model canvas. Business model canvas is basically the main idea where I took this from, because I have used business model canvas a lot in the past.
Very handy, yeah.
And for me, this is an easy way, if you know how to handle it, to get an understanding of your business. And that's basically what I took. I want to create something as easy as that. I mean, it will never work that you can do it without any explanation, but it's for me the most simple way, and I can coach you on that high level, or I can coach you in all the detailed levels, or the coaches of my business can do that. And it's not just me.
It's super interesting, because I think what you're doing is like, I just saw, because talking about favorite customers, we have Rude jumping on to say hello. Hello, Rude. But it's actually,
hey, Rude.
It's kind of interesting that he's jumped on, because he represents the Event Design Collective. And I think what they've also done is they've laid out a structure for event design, but within each pillar, they have a suggestion of kind of approach or tools that you can use. But in a way, what you can do is you can implement your own tools. And what I feel with what you've just shown is that you can actually, if you have a deeper understanding of your process and flow, I can either get you in to coach everybody into the deeper aspects and maybe your team. But then also, if I have an understanding of some of these, like business model canvas, I've done a lot of those myself, but at least now I can plug it into where I think it's relevant within the innovation process, which I think is super valuable, what you just shown here. So great stuff. Jens,
that's why I think it, maybe just to add on, sorry.
No, go.
That's why I think it's also an opportunity for coaches. So all consultants. So it's not just for me and my business. That's why it's there for free to download, and as well give us feedback, because for me, this is the state where we are in. I've iterated it over the last 2 years, and there's always an opportunity to change things while we are learning, which I think is needed in making it better. So if there are people who are using it or want to use it, happy to do a couple of sessions and explaining it. Going more into details and so on.
And that's I'm slowly want to wrap up, because we're getting in top of the hour, and I know that you're also a very busy man, Jens. The thing is, what I wanted to get into is like just the call to action. The one call to action we don't have is to your website, to the 1 million. We'll add that. Apologies for that. I don't even think of that. But we have your innovation framework website, where you can go to hatelandinnovation.com. Jens, where else can we go to grab content, to follow you? I mean, you're basically everywhere, but what would be your advice?
Yeah, I was about to say. So if you're checking this out on LinkedIn, you can follow me on LinkedIn. There's a lot of stuff going out from my side. You can do the same on Facebook, Instagram. I have a YouTube channel, which I'm pushing a lot of content in, where I'm doing all the educational long form videos. So if you're interested in that, and of course you can come to 1millioninnovateurs.com to give me a testimonial.
I have to.
Like Werner will be doing someday.
I'll be working on it this weekend. We'll get it done. And then Jens, the other thing that I also wanted to touch on, because as we wrap up, I'll say the thank yous in a second, but there's also one or two other things that we're working on, because full transparency, I get to work with you on a few things along the way where you drag me in so we can have a bit of fun. One of the things that we are having fun with, which I didn't create any reference yet, we're still working on how we're going to package this, is the Innovators Breakfast, where you're hosting myself, Dennis Lawyer, and Joshua. I always forget his, or can't pronounce his surname properly. Joshua's surname?
Nuttall. However you pronounce that. You're South African.
Yeah, but I mean, who's got a surname like Nuttall? Sorry, Joshua. But Joshua, myself, Jens, Dennis, we get together. We've done it now for a second time. You can find the show on Jens's channel. It'll be on my channels as well very soon. Got some work to do, but we are intending to do more of these where we talk about innovation, entrepreneurship. Why am I talking about it, Jens? This is you're the father of this.
No, you're part of that. No, it's maybe to just give a little bit of background. I've started a podcast as part of the 1 million movement, where I thought it's like, I will just interview a lot of interesting people. So if you're interested in that, it's everywhere. It's on YouTube, the video version. It's as well on all the podcasting stations. And one thing I've found out is that I've had a lot of interesting people who could be fitting together. So I've asked like Werner, Joshua, and Dennis, if we could meet up again, the four of us, and have a discussion on a specific topic. That was basically the start. Then we said, let's make a breakfast meeting out of that, where we meet and have a discussion for an hour, and that's it. And that's now morphing into, we did the second one, and it looks like at least the numbers behind the scenes are looking good, that there's value for people. So we looked into how can we make this an established thing, and not just one which is happening on my channels as well, how we can plug that into the other people's channels.
I'm going to wrap this up. I mean, I could stay on for a long, long time. And by the way, the guy who we destroyed, his surname, he popped in to say thank you that we have given him a mention and completely destroyed his surname for him. I should be ashamed. My surname is Puchert after all. But seriously speaking, Jens, thanks for joining me. Thanks for making the time to do this. And I'll be rooting for you, and hopefully also supporting you getting to the 1 million, because I think the other thing is also you can't do it on your own. You need friends and people who support you. And there's a lot of people who support what you're doing. And I think we're all willing to get our hands dirty and get stuck in. So I'm looking forward to celebrating with you at the end of the year when we have 1 million people on your website singing your praises, or at least busy changing the world. So thank you very much, Jens.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure.